Welcome to another edition of Eusebius on Times Live. There's so much going on in the country this week, from blackouts that are continuing to also, of course, a change in who is in charge of one of the most important metros in the country, Nelson Mandela Bay. You might be confused, even as a resident who is living in the Bay Area, in terms of what the hell happened the other night when all the way until 3 o'clock in the morning, there were scuffles, there were disagreements about processes. And when we all woke up, there was a new mayor, executive mayor elected in charge of Nelson Mandela Bay. Now, I think that this is a story not just of interest to you in the Eastern Cape, in Port Elizabeth and surrounding areas, Gqeberha, but also a national story. And I want to first understand what happened exactly there. And I want to unravel the story so that we can make sense of it, not least because I think we all take it as a fait accompli that after 2024, we're going to see coalitions provincially and not just at local government level. But if it doesn't work at local level, then one's got to raise the obvious question. What are the prospects of coherent, stable coalitions when it comes to provinces constituting governments after 2024? Now, joining me for this conversation are two of my colleagues down in Gqeberha, Andisa Bonani, who is a senior politics reporter, as well as Rochelle de Kock, the editor of the Herald. And the work that they do is absolutely brilliant. And I'm delighted that they're joining me this morning. You're listening to Eusebius on Times Live. That's this latest podcast on Times Live. And it's me, Eusebius McKaiser, exploring the major issues of the week. That means you're going to hear a lot of law, politics, and ethics, how they intersect, and how important these stories are in the life of all South Africans.
When people zoll,
their children must know these are sellouts.
They put saliva on the paper.
Mr. Julius Malema whispered and said, sing it, sing it.
And then they share that zone.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
Can I have my iPad, please? So they stole it.
Thanks so much, Rochelle and Andisa, for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you, Eusebius.
Morning. Thank you, Eusebius, for having us.
Andisa, I want to start with you because I want the facts to just be very clear. Mm-hmm. The morning after, I sent some of your tweets and some of the reporting from the Herald to my dad, who lives there in Kensington. And there was just silence because there was just a stunned response, even as an engaged resident of your city, to what had happened, and also not quite recognizing the name of the new mayor. I think, or could be wrong, I hope so, because I'm sure your readers are more informed in this, but I suspect that if we were to ask 100 random people at Cleary Park, who is the mayor of Nelson Mandela Bay, many of them might not even be able to answer the question. Who is the mayor and what the hell happened?
The new mayor as of Wednesday or Thursday morning is Mr. Tief Odendaal of the DA. That's the new guy.
And how long had he been a councillor for, and what do we know about him? I've seen on Facebook some colleagues, our colleague at the Sowetan, who also comes from the Eastern Cape like all of us, Rochelle also engaging on her page, saying that, you know what, the guy's solid, he's got some pedigree, he's been around for a while. Give us a little bit of a sense of his political biography and experience within the council.
He's been a councillor since 2009 on and off. So some people do know him, of course, especially in the DA. Whether he'd been he's known in the northern areas is another case. But he was a caucus leader for the DA before. He's been around. What happened on the day is that the council meeting was supposed to have started at 10 a.m. And of course, delays started just before 11. And just on the onset, councillors wanted to clarify an issue of what was going to be discussed in the agenda. Because when the notice of the agenda was sent out, I think on Monday, there was no indication in terms of the items that were going to be discussed. But it just said they were going to continue with the items from the previous meeting. Now, the previous meeting was supposed to have taken place on September 7, but it failed because it did not meet the quorum. And that was due to one DOP councillor who the DA was banking on to be part of the council so that they can have at least 62 people on their side to unseat the previous mayor, Eugene Johnson. But that one councillor did not make it to council. Only one DOP arrived, but the council failed because they couldn't meet the quorum. So they took a break on Wednesday to try and check what was going on. And shortly after they returned from a break, councillors wanted to know what was the issue, because there were two DA councillors who had been connected to the meeting virtually. One of those councillors had been sick for the most part of the year and hadn't attended physically. So they wanted to know his medical conditions, because according to what they know is that he cannot speak, he can hardly move parts of his body. So how has he been contributing to council meetings before? So that was the bone of contention with which led to the scuffles, the insults, the complaints, the whole day that day.
Why is that such a big thing, by the way, from a process point of view? I couldn't understand that. Does the council rules bar someone from participation virtually, or were the other political parties, what were they trying to imply about this person being sick and being on virtually? Because I thought to myself, my God, this is high drama. The person has got to be physically present, rushed over to make sure that they're physically voting. I thought we had, since COVID at least, if not before, made accommodation for online engagement in these processes.
The rules of council do make provision for councillors to be able to contribute virtually, but they're questioning whether he was of the right mind to be able to make the critical decision that I made at council. But one of Patriotic Alliance councillors quoted a rule, I think it's Rule 22E in the rule book, which stipulates that the chairperson of the meeting, which is the speaker, needs to ensure that everyone who's connected virtually can be heard and be seen from the outset of the meeting. So now the councillors wanted to make sure, they wanted to see the guy, they wanted him to switch on his camera so that they can see him, to ensure that no one else is there making decisions for him, and also for him to say something to ensure that he can actually speak and make arguments and contributions to the meeting. He switched on the camera, he and another DA councillor who also had connected virtually. We saw them, and the one councillor at some point, she said something, but the Mr. Tebo Ndwalaza, who is the one who is said to be sick, did not say something. So they wanted him to say something on camera to be sure that he can actually contribute, and he couldn't. So there was debate and everything else, and then the DA at some point said, you know what, we're going to bring on the guy, we're going to call him, both of them to come to council. We waited for, I think, more than an hour for the guy to arrive. He did not arrive, and that was the issue. Why is he not here when you said he was going to arrive?
Yeah.
So the council meeting had to continue, and the DA had to forfeit that councillor's vote because he wasn't there. And from what I understand, he really is a secret person. Whether he's off a sound mind, I don't know. Whether he can contribute, I don't know. But he's not well to have gone to council physically.
Rochelle, I want to bring you in here. When I listen to Andisa, I am fascinated by the minutiae, and we're going to go back to the minutiae in a second because the processes are important. But I think to myself, these processes are playing out with a tit-for-tat shouting about how to interpret council rules. And it mimics what often happens in National Parliament when MPs bob up and down and tell the Speaker, I'm rising on rule number blah, 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 blah. But in the meantime, the question is, what is the experience of Joe Soap? If you are living in warmer township, if you are in Adcock Vale, if you are in the northern suburbs, how does your life relate to what's going on at the Feather Market? And so I guess my first question to you is, the coalitions are so many in terms of the number of partners in Nelson Mandela Bay. Was it doomed to fail from the beginning, or was there some stability before this week's drama?
Look, Eusebius, I think we've just been on an ongoing roller coaster ride of bad governance. I'd say since 2011. In fact, I would take it back even to 2008 when the instability, you know, started, where we started to see the factional politics within the ANC spilling over into City Hall. We had the removal of the mayor at the time, Nondumiso Maphazi. And in came Unionist Zanikolo Wayile, and then there was the factional battles within the ANC, and those started to really see a city that had consecutive clean audit reports, unqualified audit reports. I mean, the city used to win awards for being clean. And today, if you were to come and take a drive here, it'll be hard to find a traffic light that's working, and that's not even, you know, got anything to do with load shedding. It's difficult to ride, to drive anywhere on these roads without encountering any potholes. Street lights are not working. Our city is filthy. It is absolutely filthy. And so these have been just consecutive years of just a leadership crisis. And every time an election takes place, it just gets worse. And I mentioned that because it's really where it all started, and we'd had officials acting with impunity. No one's ever been held accountable. We've had, you know, billions of rand wasted in like a, you know, grant money that was meant to, you know, better the city when it comes to, you know, bus systems and improving our road network. None of that has really just even come to fruition. So, you know, and then we had, you know, Danny Yordan brought in as the savior. Things started to happen, you know, but it wasn't long enough. And then we had an election, and then we suddenly had a coalition government in Nelson Mandela Bay for the first time. For those 2 years that Ethel Trollope was mayor, I would say for the first 10 months or the first year, we really did start to see a difference. There was some stability. We had officials that were working. We had a city manager who's an administrator of note. And then there was the factional fighting between, you know, Trollope and Bobani, and things just went downhill from there. And we had, you know, Trollope remove Bobani in and suspending the city manager. And every other week there'd be a new acting city manager. And it was just, it's been chaos. And everybody looked to the 2021 elections as, okay, this is going to be the saving grace, you know, let's see the election. So finally, you know, we could see some semblance of stability in our city. And it just got worse, Eusebius. A coalition government in Nelson Mandela Bay doesn't work because the members of those coalition governments spend all the time or most of the time concerned about who's going to be in what positions than any discussion about governance. I mean, I look at the council meetings. There's never any discussions of substance. The discussions about who was you know, the city manager, and it's discussions about suspensions. But there's never anything about development. We don't even have a situation where we're discussing, you know, like what are catalytic projects that the city is pursuing. We don't have any of that. We're discussing whether or not we're going to have water and why some areas have substations that are constantly down. And, you know, and those are the matters that the residents are preoccupied with. And if I may just quickly come in here, Eusebius, before you cut me off. We have an unprecedented situation here where we've got big business, organized business, that have had to take over the role of governance in some instances. We've had businesses that are adopting substations to guard those substations because vandalism is such a major crisis.
Yeah. I was flabbergasted when I heard that from one of your business persons and our colleague Peter Bruce on his podcast a couple of months ago.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, we've got companies that are now, you know, asking, okay, what can we do to even help the police? What do the police need? We've got, there's so many massive industries here, you know, with origins in Europe, and they are questioning why does it feel like we're being double taxed here? Yeah. Because, you know, we're having to take care of substations, we're having to help fix leaks. They're sending, you know, plumbers out into communities to help fix leaks because the city is just not doing it.
That's absolutely, absolutely insane. Andisa, what formally was the motion that led to the mayor, deputy mayor, and also the whip suddenly finding themselves without a job this week? After 2021, if I'm thinking of the wonderful long timeline that Rochelle has so crisply summarized for us, let's do a bit of a pause over after 2021, how things had played out. I mean, the mayor that has just been booted out, how did she do? I listened to one or two of her interviews at the beginning of her reign, and I was cringing so much that I changed the channel a couple of times.
The vote of no confidence against the mayor is simply based on the fact that councillors of the opposition are saying they're not confident in her leadership. She's not fit to hold office, and she was unprepared and hopeless in her role. That was basically what they were complaining about. They've been saying since she took over, service delivery in the Bay has been at a grinding halt. She has no local government experience. She was basically put in that position to represent the northern area because it's such a huge constituency in the Bay. I mean, there are two other political parties that come from that area. So they wanted to get the voters from that area. So that's why she was put in the pedestal and to become mayor of the Bay by the ANC. So that has
What's her name, by the way? Is it Eugene or Eugenie?
Eugene Johnson.
Eugene.
Yes.
But she's supposed to be a businesswoman and she comes from the area. It's amazing how those things can be deceptive, right? Because you get excited and you say, oh, House of Froze, Lake Netswas, Ek and Jace is my Antifa next door. And next thing you know, she is no different than the incumbents that had lost that particular position. In your opinion or assessment as a senior political reporter, how does she compare to others in that position?
I mean, she as a person and in politics, she's good at working on the ground, but administratively, I wouldn't be sure. Compared to other political, other leaders who've been mayors, I think they were more popular and they were more popular in politics more than anything. She's said to be not to be strong and she's new, she's not known by the people. So her confidence from the people when it comes to her wasn't very strong. So other people had been aware, people knew, for example, Mr. Jordan, though he was more in sports, but at least he was known by the people. So people sometimes, were because they know you as a person, it's because they know of your work. So I think her main role was to try and get the northern areas of the Bay to try and get to vote for the ANC. But I mean, that happened last year. But in terms of the work, when it comes to conducting her duties as mayor, that's where the people started to say, okay, things have never been like this before. We need to change.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Andisa, you blink and then suddenly the coalition lines of division are changed. It's very difficult unless you are an ace reporter like yourself or I think of someone like Yanyan Yobert, who's written a book, an excellent book on coalitions in the country. It's really difficult to keep tabs because you've got so many political parties beyond the obvious big ones. You almost need like a whiteboard and then on the left column and the right column, you put who is voting who and then it changes every other day.
Yes.
Who voted in favor of the mayor retaining her position? And I seem to be a little bit confused. The EFF, you never know where the hell these oaks will end up in any voting decision in any of our metros or municipalities. I was a bit flabbergasted. If the record of the mayor is at best checkered, I couldn't understand why any opposition party would vote in favor of retaining her in that position rather than putting a new broom in charge. In the most simple possible terms, tell us what the most important observations are about who voted in favor and against, and what their reasons were, even if we have to speculate.
Now, there are 13 political parties at the Nelson Mandela Bay Council. Of course, the ANC voted to retain Johnson, and they have 48 seats. And then the Patriotic Alliance with 2 seats also voted, and the EFF, which has 8 seats voted, you know. So remember now, everyone else, of course, voted for the DA, and minus the one DA vote from the Sikli councillor. In terms of why they voted, I think last week the EFF had made a demand to the ANC to say if they want them to vote with them in this council meeting, on the Wednesday council meeting, they needed to get rid of Eugene Johnson. That's what the EFF had demanded from the ANC. And there were rumors leading to the council meeting that Eugene had been sent a letter by her party to step down. I think that could have been the reason. I think that could have been the reason for the party to send her because of the EFF's demand for her to step down. So I think if she had stepped down prior, I don't know, maybe other political parties would have changed their minds. But as things stand, it's like other parties have no faith in the ANC as a whole. It doesn't matter who's at the helm. They just want, they just don't want the ANC to be at the helm of the party because of previous experience. So, but when you check the dynamics, we ended up with 21 councillors participating on the weekend, I mean on Wednesday at the council meeting, and 60 people voted against the mayor and 58 voted for her. But when it came to the deputy mayor, chief whip and the other motions that were tabled, one person in the DA led coalition voted for the ANC led coalition. So it's quite an interesting dynamic as to what are the reasons why are people voting the way they're voting. We don't know what happens behind closed doors in terms of, because there've been speculations of people being bought to try and, you know, because remember in the council meeting of September 7, the DOP councillor who didn't make it was said to have been threatened. Her life was threatened. Mm-hmm. That's why she couldn't make it. So it's those kind of things that happen. Whether that's true or not, it's debatable. But if you find those kind of things, they happen when it comes to these kind of things, and when a mayor needs to be, when they want to unseat a mayor. So it's an interesting dynamic which could change any day, because it's just one seat that makes
a difference. That's absolutely crazy, Rochelle. When I listen to Andisa, what she is saying underscores the broader points that you've made with that institutional memory of what had happened in years gone by. And this is why this is a national story, because we may easily have spoken about other municipalities in the country when it comes to fractious alliances. I mean, the horse trading that you are talking about happens here in Johannesburg as well. It happens in other parts of the country as well. Nothing in what Andisa said, Rochelle, spoke to differences when it comes to solutions for water scarcity in Nelson Mandela Bay, how to deal with housing backlog, for example, how to ensure that the city again become, you know, sort of proudly synonymous with excellence when it comes to manufacturing in the automobile industry, for example. Differences when it comes to how to problem solve spatial apartheid geography that still is a massive, massive constraint on Black African and colored, using for purposes of making the point, exactly the apartheid nomenclature that are the vestiges of Port Elizabeth, making sure that they have a better shot at living well. Nothing that Andisa says speaks to solving problems for the residents. It's all about horse trading again, Rochelle.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's what it comes down to, and it's the it was the same in the term of 2016 to 2021. There was nothing about Trollope's leadership at the time, you know, that they could say it was a lack of dealing with matters, you know, on the ground, you know, when it comes to service delivery. It all became about white arrogance. I mean, you would remember Julius Malema's quote where he said, "We're going to cut the throat of whiteness," and that's how they eventually, you know, removed Trollope from that position. So it's never, and in this time as well, they're not debating matters of substance. They're not debating the fact that, you know, for a full week, Motherwell was a no-go area. The entire citrus industry was cut off from the port of Noha for a week because, you know, of protests. And we, in fact, we had a picture in the Weekend Post the one day to say the mayor's busy playing golf and the large part of your city is burning. The citrus industry can't get to the port of Noxa. So those are the dynamics that we're dealing with here. There aren't any matters of substance that these parties are debating about. It's all about positions. Yes, there are a few of the one or two smaller parties that perhaps, you know, do feel like I think of the ACDP. They'll always be raising matters of governance, DA sometimes as well, but and the AIC. But I don't think that that is at the core of why they choose to you know, the alliances that they are making.
You've seen it all before. You've heard it all before, Rachel. Yes. The Herald's first interview with a new mayor, I checked the tweets and also the article, is making all the right noises. And as I read that, I wondered whether a resident of Nelson Mandela Bay would roll their eyes or be hopeful, because he says all the obvious things that one want to hear and should hear, quite frankly, such as my first duty is to make sure there's political stability, because there's a link between political stability and administrative efficiency. And of course, one can't deny that to be literally a true statement, but the question's got to be asked, am I justified to be cynical, or do you think there's a space here for possibly doing business anew?
Look, I think it's a bit of both. There's a lot of cynicism in our city, and in fact, you know, we're always talking about the fact that we need to instill some hope, because there's really just been a feeling of hopelessness across the board, you know, over the last few years even, but more so the last few months. And so there are some people who say, look, we've heard it all before, or whatever, you know, he'll only be there for a few months, which I think is very possible, knowing the dynamics in our city. Mm-hmm. But I also would like to say, and I mean, I'm not at all, you know, aligned to anybody, but I do know this councillor. I know him, his work as a councillor. Mm-hmm. He's been a mayoral committee member in charge of budget and treasury. He's the kind of person that is approachable, and he does get on well generally with other political parties. Mm. He's a very hardworking councillor, and he's an administrator of note. Mm-hmm. You'll find also in the Sweden editor's post where some party members were commenting, including EFF as well as some from the ANC, will say, look, you can say what you want, we've always worked well with him.
That's right. He's
a solid guy. He really is. When it comes to knowing our city, he knows the city very well. He's got institutional memory. He's an attorney by profession. So he knows laws. He's always raising those kind of things. I don't know for how long, when it comes to matters of politics and the fact that
such,
you know,
he's going to have
to work with some very difficult characters.
Yes.
That I don't think it's going to last very long, to be honest with you.
I've got a final question.
All the demands come.
Yeah. I've got a final question for each of you. Andisa, just give us a sense so that also the readers of the Herald and our listeners across Arena can understand how we work as political animals. As you watch this story unfold going forward, what are some of the three or four most important angles or issues you're going to be watching out for to try and make sense of whether the new leadership is able to deliver?
One of the major issues that opposition councillors have been highlighting is the building of houses. Is that going to happen now that there's a new mayor, or was that just elements to discredit the previous mayor? Also, just general service delivery. But most importantly, Eusebius, it's the issue of the Section 12 that's hanging over this council. There was, I think, a letter sent by Cocta. Cocta visited the Bay, I think, last month to present Section 12, which would allow for an executive to basically take over the reins, a 10-member executive to take over the reins. So that would be a multi-party executive. Obviously, the two major parties will have more seats than the other smaller parties. Now, that was gazetted last month, and it was sent out to the public to make submissions. That was extended, I'm not sure until when, but I think now that the ANC has lost the seat, the COGTA in the province is going to institute that section.
Oh, wow.
To institute that section for that. So that to unseat the DA, basically. So I think that's the major story I'll be looking forward to. So maybe before even the end of October, we won't have a mayor. We'll have a 10-member executive.
Rochelle, I want to combine two final questions. I could hear you clearing your throat while Andusa speaking. So jump on there and tell me what you make of that prediction and that issue. And then I want you to end off and have the final say on a national question on the basis of what you guys are experiencing down in the Eastern Cape. What are your thoughts on the prospects of stable service delivery coalitions at provincial level after 2024?
I was laughing now when Andisa spoke about the Section 12, because that's the very first thing that the new MEC of COGTA has raised in his statement about, you know, the shenanigans in Nelson Mandela Bay. So basically what you have is the ANC running Nelson Mandela Bay from Bishop. They're saying we scrap that, you know, the council system and have a 10-member executive where you've got four ANC, four DA, and I think two other political parties. And council, you know, most of the council, they basically just completely rubbished that. There's like, no, absolutely not. And I do suspect that's what's going to happen. So that's going to be a very interesting
one. Crazy.
And I think we can look forward to a few court cases coming up in that matter.
That is absolutely crazy. I've got to say in parenthesis, if you look at the municipality in Makhana, the residents managed to get, as you guys know, a legal victory over the last 2 years to force Bishop to take over a dilapidated municipality. And in that case, because the ANC was running Makhana, they were not interested in basically complying with a court order to take over the municipality. But because they're not in charge in Nelson Mandela Bay, suddenly politics make them want to bend as far as they can the cooperative governance model in their favor.
Absolutely. And look, they do it under the guise of, oh, we're trying to bring stability. But come on. The Eastern Cape government doesn't necessarily have the best track record when it comes to good governance. But just on your other topic, look, UCBS, I do not bet for coalition governments. I think our politicians are too immature for it. Mm. I think our politics is immature for it. Mm. I do think we have perhaps too many political parties. Maybe that's the problem. Mm. I cannot see that it would take our country forward. I do think it is something that is going to be a reality, maybe 2024, perhaps the next election thereafter. Mm. But it's not something that our democracy is, I think, ready for. And I think our politicians are just not mature enough to put the citizens of our country first.
Note, thanks.
Sorry.
They're taking all sorts of study tours. I see the Scandinavians are paying for them. Some of them are out having fun in Denmark. You know, they're going to study how to get it right. So let's see whether they come back with any lessons. Rochelle de Kock, my colleague who's the editor of The Herald, thank you so, so much for what has been a fascinating conversation. And also Andisa Bonani, please follow them and The Herald on Twitter. And it's really important that we keep tabs on what happens in the entire country and learn lessons that we can cross-pollinate. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us, Eusebius.
Thank you, Eusebius.
Cheers.